Soon we were leaving Boston behind, sailing through the mouth of the channel between Logan Airport and the Seaport District. I liked the Big Banana a lot more when it wasn't bouncing through subterranean rapids or drifting toward interdimensional waterfalls. A strong wind filled the sail. The sunset turned the downtown skyline to red gold. The sea stretched ahead of us in silky sheets of blue, and for now, all I had to do was stand at the prow and enjoy the view. After a long, hard day, I might even have been able to relax, except I kept thinking about my Uncle Randolph. He had once sailed out of this same harbor, searching for the Sword of Summer. His family had never come back. "This is different," I told myself. "We've got a well-trained crew of Inherjar and the stubbornest, most devout Valkyrie in Valhalla." Loki's voice echoed through my head. "Poor Sam and Alex. This quest will destroy them. They have no idea what they'll be facing." "Shut up," I murmured. "Sorry?" I hadn't realized Samira was standing right next to me. Nothing. Well, not really nothing. I had a little visit from your dad." I told her the details. Samira grimaced.
"So the usual, then. Alex has been having visions and nightmares, too, pretty much daily."
I scanned the deck, but Alex must have been below. "Really? He didn't say anything about that to me." Samira shrugged like, "That's Alex." "What about you?" I asked. "Any visions?" She tilted her head.
"No, which is interesting. Ramadan tends to focus the mind and strengthen the will. That could be why Loki hasn't been inside my head. I'm hoping..."
She let the thought trail off, but I caught her meaning. She hoped her fasting might make it harder for Loki to control her. It seemed like a long shot to me. Then again, if my dad could make me do anything he wanted simply by commanding me, I would have been willing to try anything, even forgoing falafel sandwiches to thwart him. Every time Sam said her father's name, I heard the rage simmering inside her. She hated being under his power. A passenger jet took off from Logan and roared overhead. From TJ's lookout at the top of the mast, he raised his arms and yelled, "Woohoo!" as the wind ruffled through his dark, curly hair. Being from the 1860s, TJ loved airplanes. I think they seemed more magical to him than dwarves, elves, or dragons. I felt clanging and bumping below us. Alex and Mallory, probably, getting all our supplies stowed away. Half-born Gunderson stood aft, leaning on the rudder and whistling, "Fly Me to the Moon." Stupid Valhalla elevator music earworms. "Sam, you'll be ready," I said at last. "You'll beat Loki this time." She turned to gaze at the sunset. I wondered if she was waiting for dusk, when she could eat and drink, and, most important, curse again.
"The thing about that," she said, "is I won't know until I actually face Loki. Alex's training is all about loosening me up, getting me more comfortable with shape-shifting, but..."
She swallowed.
"I don't know that I want to be more comfortable with it. I'm not like Alex."
That was undeniable. When Sam had first told me about her shape-changing abilities, she'd explained that she hated to use them. She saw it as giving in to Loki, becoming more like her father. Alex believed in claiming Loki's power as his own. Sam saw her Jotun heritage as poison that had to be expelled. She relied on discipline and structure. Pray more, give up food and drink, whatever it took. But shapeshifting, being fluid the way Alex and Loki were, that was alien to her, even though it was part of her blood. "You'll find a way," I said. "A way that works for you." She studied my face, perhaps trying to gauge whether I believed what I was saying.
"I appreciate that. But in the meantime, we have other things to worry about. Alex told me what happened at your uncle's place. Despite the warm evening, I shivered. Thinking about wolves does that to me. You have any thoughts about what my uncle's notes meant? Mead? Bulwark? Sam shook her head. We can ask Hearthstone and Blitzen when we pick them up. They've been traveling, doing a lot of, what did they call it? Long-range reconnaissance. That sounded impressive. Maybe they'd been networking with their contacts in Mimir's strange interdimensional mafia, trying to find us the safest course through the seas of the Nine Worlds. But the image that kept coming to my mind was Blitzen shopping for new outfits, while Hearthstone stood idly nearby, arranging runes into various spells to make time go faster. I'd missed those guys. Where exactly are we meeting them? I asked. Sam pointed ahead. Deer Island Lighthouse. They promised they'd be there at sunset today. Which is now. Dozens of islands dotted the coastline off Boston. I could never keep them all straight, but the lighthouse Sam was talking about was easy enough to distinguish. A squat building with a mast thing on top, jutting out of the waves like the conning tower of a concrete submarine. As we got closer, I waited to spot the glinting chainmail waistcoat of a fashionable dwarf, or an elf in black waving a candy-striped scarf. I don't see them, I muttered. I glanced up at TJ. Hey, you see anything? Our lookout seemed paralyzed. His mouth hung open, his eyes wide in an expression I'd never associated with Thomas Jefferson Jr. Pure terror. Next to me, Sam made a strangled sound. She backed away from the prow and pointed to the water between us and the lighthouse. In front of us, the sea had started to churn, swirling into a downward funnel like someone had pulled the bathtub plug out of Massachusetts Bay. Rising from the maelstrom were the giant, watery forms of women, nine in all, each as large as our ship, with dresses of foam and ice, and blue-green faces contorted with rage. I just had time to think, Percy didn't cover this in basic seamanship. Then the giant women fell on us like a vengeful tsunami, plunging our glorious yellow warship into the abyss. Chapter 8. In the Hall of the Huffy Hipster. Hurtling to the bottom of the sea was bad enough. I didn't need the singing, too. As our ship tumbled, free-falling through the eye of a saltwater cyclone, the nine giant maidens spiraled around us, weaving in and out of the tempest so they appeared to drown over and over again. Their faces contorted in anger and glee. Their long hair lashed us with icy spray. Each time they emerged, they wailed and shrieked, but it wasn't just random noise. Their screams had a tonal quality, like a chorus of whale songs played through heavy feedback. I even caught snippets of lyrics. Boiling mead. Wave daughters. Death for you. It reminded me of the first time Halfborn Gunderson played Norwegian black metal for me. After a few bars, it dawned on me. Oh, wait. That's supposed to be music. Sam and I locked arms on the rigging. TJ straddled the top of the mast, screaming like he was riding the world's most terrifying carousel pony. Halfborn wrestled the rudder, though I didn't see what good that would do in a downward plunge. Below decks, I heard Mallory and Alex getting thrown around. Kaflump! 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 Like a pair of human dice. The ship spun. With a cry of despair, TJ lost his grip and hurtled into the maelstrom. Sam zoomed after him. Thank goodness for Valkyrie powers of flight. She tackled TJ around the waist and zigzagged back to the ship with him, dodging the grasping hands of the sea giantesses and various pieces of luggage we were shedding like ballast. As soon as she reached the deck, bloosh! Our ship splash-landed and then sank. The biggest shock was the heat. I'd been expecting a freezing death. Instead, I felt like I'd been dunked in a scalding bathtub. My back arched. My muscles contracted. I managed not to inhale any liquid, but when I blinked, trying to see which way was up, the water was a strange, cloudy golden color. That can't be good, I thought. The deck surged beneath me. The big banana broke the surface of wherever we were. The storm had vanished. The nine giantesses were nowhere to be seen. Our ship bobbed and creaked on the placid golden water that bubbled around the hull, exuding a smell like exotic spices, flowers, and baked goods. In every direction rose sheer brown cliffs, a perfect ring about a mile in diameter. My first thought was that we'd been dropped in the middle of a volcanic lake. Our ship seemed to be in one piece, at least. The wet yellow sail flapped against the mast. The rigging glistened and steamed. Samira and TJ got to their feet first. They slipped and staggered aft, where half-born Gunderson was slumped over the rudder, blood dripping from an ugly gash on his forehead. For a moment, I thought, half-born gets killed that way all the time. Then I remembered we were not in Valhalla anymore. Wherever this was, if we died here, we would not get a do-over.
"He's alive," Sam announced. "Knocked out cold, though."
My ears still rang from the weird music. My thoughts moved sluggishly. I wondered why TJ and Sam were looking at me. Then I realized, oh right, I'm the healer. I ran over to help. I channeled Frey power to heal Gunderson's head wound as Mallory and Alex, both battered and bleeding, staggered out from below decks.
"What are you fools doing up here?"
Mallory demanded. As if in answer, a storm cloud rolled overhead, obscuring half the sky. A voice boomed from above.
"What are you doing in my cauldron?"
The storm cloud descended, and I realized it was a face. A face that did not look happy to see us. From my previous dealings with giants, I'd learned that the only way to process their immense size was to focus on one thing at a time. A nose the size of an oil tanker, a beard as thick and vast as a redwood forest, round, gold-rimmed glasses that looked like crop circles, and on the giant's head, what I'd taken for a storm front was the rim of the universe's largest Panama hat. The way his voice echoed in the basin, pinging off the cliffs with tinny reverberations, made me realize we were not, in fact, in a volcanic crater. Those cliffs were the metal rim of a huge pot. The steaming lake was some kind of brew, and we'd just become the secret ingredient. My friends stood with their mouths open, trying to make sense of what they were seeing, all except half-born Gunderson, who wisely remained unconscious. I was the first to regain my wits. I hate it when that happens.
"Hello,"
I said to the giant. I'm diplomatic that way, always knowing the right greeting. Frowny McHuge face furrowed his brow, giving me flashbacks to my sixth grade science lesson on plate tectonics. He glanced to either side and called out,
"Daughters, get over here!"
More gigantic faces popped up around the rim of the pot. The nine women from the maelstrom, but much larger now, their frothy hair floating about their faces, their smiles a little too manic, their eyes bright with excitement or hunger. I hoped it wasn't hunger. It was probably hunger.
"We got them, Dad,"
one of the women squeaked. Or it would have been a squeak if she hadn't been the size of South Boston.
"Yes, but why?" their father asked.
"They're yellow,"
another giantess chimed in.
"We noticed them right away. With a ship that color, We figured they deserved to drown.
I mentally began composing a list of words that began with F. Frey, father, false, friend, frick, frack, and some others.
Also, said a third daughter, one of them mentioned mead. We knew you'd want to talk to them, Dad. That's your favorite word.
Whoa, whoa, whoa!
Alex Fierro waved his hands like there was a flag on the play.
Nobody here was talking about mead. There's been some kind of mistake.
He hesitated, then frowned at me.
Right?
I pointed to Samira, who backed away, out of range of Alex's cutting wire.
I was just explaining. Doesn't matter,
boomed Frowny.
You're here now, and I can't have you in my cauldron. I'm just cooking down the mead. A Viking ship could totally ruin the flavor of the honey.
I glanced at the bubbling liquid around us. I was suddenly glad I hadn't inhaled any of it.
Honey?
I asked.
Don't you dare call me that,
Alex growled. Possibly he was kidding. I didn't want to ask. A massive hand loomed over us, and Frowny plucked up our ship by the mast.
They're too small to see properly, he complained. Let's scale things down.
I hated it when gigantic people changed the proportions of reality. Instantly, the world telescoped around me. My stomach imploded, my ears popped, my eyes expanded painfully in their sockets.
Boom! Scrape! Thump!
I stumbled over my own feet and found myself standing with my friends in the middle of a vast Viking hall. In one corner, our ship lay on its side, hot mead still dripping from the hull. The room's walls were columned with dozens of ship keels, soaring hundreds of feet up and curving inward to form the rafters of a peaked ceiling. Instead of planks or plaster filling in the space between the columns, there was nothing except rippling green water, held in place by no physics that made sense to me. Here and there, doors lined the watery walls, leading to other undersea chambers, I guessed. The floor was carpeted in squishy kelp that made me glad I had shoes on. The hall's layout wasn't much different than your typical Viking party pad. A rectangular feasting table dominated the space, with chairs of carved red coral along either side, and an elaborate throne at the far end, decorated with pearls and shark jaws. Freestanding braziers burned with ghostly green flames, filling the hall with a smell like toasted seaweed. Hanging over the main hearth fire was the cauldron we'd been floating in, though it now appeared much less massive, maybe just big enough to cook a team of oxen in. The pot's polished bronze sides were engraved with designs of waves and snarling faces. Our host, Captor, the frowny daddy giant guy, stood before us, his arms crossed, his brow knit. He was now only twice as tall as a human. The cuffs of his army green skinny jeans were turned up over pointy black boots. His suit vest was buttoned over a white dress shirt, the sleeves pushed back to show lots of swirling runic tattoos on his forearms. With his Panama hat and his gold-rimmed glasses, he looked like an agitated Whole Foods shopper, stuck in the express line behind a bunch of people with too many items, when all he wanted to do was purchase his macrobiotic matcha smoothie and leave. Behind him, in a loose semicircle, stood the 9 wave girls, who were not, shockingly, doing the wave. Each giantess was terrifying in her own special way, but they all leered and giggled and pushed each other around with the same level of excitement, like fans waiting for a star to come through the stage door so they could tear him to pieces to show their love. I recalled my encounter with the sea goddess Ran, who had described her husband as a hipster who liked microbrewing. At the time, the description had been too weird to comprehend. Afterward, it had seemed funny. Now, it seemed a little too real, because I was pretty sure the hipster god in question was standing right in front of me.
You are Aegir, I guessed. God of the sea. Aegir grunted in a way that implied, yeah, so? You still tainted my mead. And these, I gulped. These lovely ladies are your daughters?
Of course, he said. The nine giantesses of the waves. This is Heimingglava, Hevring, Hrone.
I'm Hevring, Dad, said the tallest girl. She's Hrone.
Right, said Aegir. And Oon, and Bulgua.
Bigly, asked Mallory, who was doing her best to hold up a half-conscious half-born.
Nice to meet you all,
Samira yelped, before Aegir could introduce Comet, Cupid, and Rudolph.
We claim guest rights!
Samira was smart. In certain polite Jotun households, claiming guest rights could get you a free pass from being slaughtered, at least temporarily. Aegir harumphed.
What do you take me for, a savage? Of course you have guest rights. Despite the fact that you ruined my mead, and you have an insultingly yellow ship, you're in my house now. We at least have to have a meal together before I decide what to do with you. Unless one of you is Magnus Chase, of course, in which case I'd have to kill you right away. One of you isn't he, I hope.
No one responded, though my friends all glared at me like,
dang it, Magnus.
Just hypothetically, I said, if we had a Magnus Chase, why would you kill him?
Because I promised my wife Ran, Aegir cried. For some reason, she hates that guy.
The nine daughters nodded vigorously, muttering,
hates him a lot. Yes, tons.
Ah, I was glad I was drenched in mead. Maybe it would hide the sweat popping up on my forehead.
And where is your lovely wife? Not here tonight, Aegir said. She's out collecting trash in her nets.
Thank gods, I said. I mean, thank gods we at least get to spend some quality time with the rest of you. Aegir tilted his head.
Yes. Well, daughters, I suppose you should set extra places at the table for our guests. I'll talk to our chef about cooking up those juicy prisoners.
He waved toward one of the side doors, which swung open by itself. Inside was a vast kitchen. When I saw what was suspended above the oven, it took all my willpower not to scream like a wave giantess. Hanging in two matching extra-large canary cages were our long-range reconnaissance experts, Blitzen and Hearthstone. Chapter 9. I become a temporary vegetarian. That awkward moment when you lock eyes with two friends hanging in cages in a giant's kitchen, and one of them recognizes you and begins to shout your name, but you do not want your name shouted. Blitzen staggered to his feet, gripped the bars of his cage, and yelled,
Magnificent! I bellowed over him. What beautiful specimens!
I jogged toward the cages, Sam and Alex on my heels. Aegir frowned.
Daughters, see to our other guests.
He made a sweeping take-out-the-trash gesture toward Mallory and TJ, who were still trying to keep our semi-conscious berserker from face-planting in the kelp. Then the sea god followed us into the kitchen. The appliances were all twice human size. The oven knobs alone would have made decent dinner plates. Hearthstone and Blitzen, looking unharmed but humiliated, dangled over the four-burner cooktop, their cages knocking against a tile backsplash that was painted with Buon Appetito in garish red cursive. Hearthstone wore his usual black biker outfit, his candy-striped scarf the only flourish of color. His pale face and white blonde hair made it difficult to tell if he was anemic or terrified or just mortified by the Buon Appetito sign. Blitzen straightened his navy blue blazer,
then made sure his mauve silk dress shirt was properly tucked into his jeans. His matching handkerchief and ascot were a little askew, but the dude looked pretty good for a prisoner who was on today's dinner menu. His curly black hair and beard were well-trimmed. His dark complexion coordinated beautifully with the iron bars of his cage. If nothing else, Aegir should have let him go for being a fellow snazzy dresser. I used a quick flurry of sign language to warn them. Don't say my name. A-E-G-I-R will kill me. I spelled out the god's name since I didn't know what name sign we might use for him. Frowny, beer man, or H for hipster were all logical choices. The god appeared at my side.
They are magnificent specimens, he agreed. We always try to have a fresh catch of the day in case guests stop by.
Right. Very smart, I said. But do you normally eat dwarves and elves? I didn't think gods...
Gods?
Aegir barked a laugh.
Well, there's your mistake, little mortal. I'm not one of those namby-pamby Aesir or Vanir gods. I'm a Jotun deity. 100% giant.
I hadn't heard the term namby-pamby since third grade PE class with Coach Wicket, but I seemed to recall it not being a compliment. So, you do eat dwarves and elves?
Sometimes.
Aegir sounded a bit defensive.
And the occasional troll or human, though I draw the line at hobgoblin. Too gamey. Why do you ask?
He narrowed his eyes.
Do you have special dietary restrictions?
Sam, again, was quickest on the draw.
Yes, actually. I'm Muslim.
Aegir winced.
I see. Sorry. Yes, I don't think dwarves are halal. I'm not sure about elves.
They're not either, Sam said. In fact, it's Ramadan, which means I need to break my fast in the company of dwarves and elves, rather than eating them or being around anyone who does eat them. It's strictly forbidden.
I was pretty sure she was making that up, but what did I know? I suppose she was counting on Aegir knowing even less about Quranic restrictions than I did.
What a pity, our host sighed. And the rest of you?
I'm a vegetarian, I said, which wasn't true, but hey, falafel was a vegetable. I glanced at Blitz and Hearth. They gave me 4 enthusiastic thumbs up.
And I have green hair.
Alex spread his hands like, what are you gonna do?
I'm afraid eating dwarves or elves goes against my beliefs, but I very much appreciate the offer.
Aegir glowered, as if we were testing the limits of his culinary hospitality. He stared at Blitzen and Hearthstone, now leaning casually against the bars of their cages, and trying to look as non-halal as possible.
So much for the catch of the day, Aegir grumbled. But we always do our best to accommodate our guests. Eldir?
He yelled the last word so loudly, I jumped and hit my head on the oven door handle. A side door swung open, and an old man shuffled out of the pantry in a cloud of smoke. He was dressed in a white chef's outfit, complete with poofy hat, but his clothes seemed to be in the process of combusting. Flames danced across his sleeves and apron. Smoke streamed from his collar like his chest was coming to a boil. Sparks wormed through his gray eyebrows and beard. He looked about 600 years old. His expression so sour, he might have spent that entire time smelling terrible things.
What is it? He snapped. I was preparing my elfish salt rub.
We'll need something different for dinner, Aegir ordered. No elf, no dwarf.
What?
Eldir grumbled.
Our guests have food restrictions. Halal, vegetarian, green hair friendly.
And it's Ramadan, Sam added. So you'll need to free those prisoners so they can break my fast with me.
Humph, said Eldir. Expect me to.
Mutter, mutter.
Short notice.
Mutter, mutter.
Green hair friendly menu? I may have some kelp patties in the freezer.
He tromped back into the pantry, still complaining and smoldering. I don't mean to be rude, I said to Aegir. But is your chef on fire?
Oh, Eldir has been like that for centuries. Ever since my other servant, Fimavang, got killed by Loki, which left Eldir with twice as much work and made him burning mad.
A little bubble of hope formed in my chest. Killed by Loki, you say?
Yes, Aegir frowned. Surely you heard how that scoundrel disgraced my hall.
I glanced at Sam and Alex like, hey guys, Aegir is another enemy of Loki. Then I remembered that Sam and Alex were both children of Loki. Aegir might not like my friends any more than he liked people named Magnus Chase. Lord Aegir, Sam said, that time Loki disgraced your hall, was that the Feast of the Gods?
Yes, yes, Aegir said. A complete disaster. The gossip bloggers had a field day with it.
I could almost see Sam's mind working. If she'd been Eldir, steam would have been pouring from the edges of her hijab. I remember the story, Sam said. She grabbed Alex's arm. I have to pray. Alex needs to help me. Alex blinked. I do? Lord Aegir, Sam continued. May I use a corner of your hall for a quick prayer? The sea god tugged on his vest.
Well, I suppose.
Thanks. Sam and Alex scurried out of the kitchen. I hoped they were going to formulate a cunning plan to get us all out of Aegir's hall alive. If Sam was really just going to pray, well, I wondered if she'd ever tried to say a Muslim prayer in the home of a Norse god. Sorry, Jotun deity, before. I was afraid the entire place might collapse from religious paradox. Aegir stared at me. That awkward dinner party silence when you've tried to serve dwarf and elf to a vegetarian.
I'm going to retrieve some mead from the cellar, he said at last. Please tell me you and your friends don't have dietary restrictions against mead. I think we're good, I said, because I did not want to see a grown Jotun cry.
Thank the waves.
Aegir dug a set of keys from his vest pocket and tossed them to me.
Unlock the dinner. I mean the prisoners, would you? Then make yourself...
He waved vaguely toward the feast hall, then stomped off, leaving me to imagine how he might have finished that sentence. Comfortable, scarce, a sandwich. I climbed the oven and freed Blitz and Hearth from their canary cages. We had a tearful reunion on the front left burner.
Kid!
Blitzen gave me a hug.
I knew you'd come rescue us!
Actually, I didn't know you guys were here. I used sign language as I talked, for Hearthstone's benefit, though it had been several weeks and my hands were slow. You get out of practice fast.
But I'm really glad I found you.
Hearthstone snapped his fingers for attention. I'm glad too, he signed. He patted the bag of runes at his belt. Stupid cages were magic-proof. Blitzen was crying a lot.
I was not, Blitzen protested, signing along. You were.
I was not, Hearthstone said. You were. At that point, the ASL conversation deteriorated into the two of them poking each other in the chest.
Guys, I interrupted. What happened? How did you end up here?
Long story, Blitz said. We were waiting for you guys at the lighthouse, minding our own business.
Fighting a sea serpent, Hearth signed. Doing nothing wrong, Blitz said. Hitting a serpent on the head with rocks.
Well, it was threatening us, Blitz said. Then this wave came up and swallowed us.
Wave contained 9 angry women. Serpent was their pet.
How was I supposed to know that? Blitz grumbled. The serpent didn't look like it was trying to play fetch. But that's not important, kid. We found out some information on our reconnaissance, and it isn't good.
Guests! Aegir called from Main Hall. Come! Join us for mead and food.
Put a pin in that, Hearthstone signed, poking Blitz in the chest one last time. Back in the days when we were 3 homeless guys on the streets of Boston, if somebody had called us for dinner, we would have come running. Now we trudged over reluctantly. This was one free meal I wasn't so pumped about. The 9 daughters of Aegir hustled about, setting the table with plates and forks and goblets. Aegir hummed as he fiddled with a rack of mead kegs, each labeled with runes. TJ, Mallory, and Halfborn were already seated, looking very uncomfortable in their red coral seats, with empty chairs spaced between them. Halfborn Gunderson, more or less conscious now, kept blinking and staring at his surroundings like he hoped he was dreaming. Over by the big banana, Samira finished her prayers. She rolled up her portable rug, had a brief, urgent conversation with Alex, then they both came over to join us. If Sam did have a brilliant plan, I was glad it didn't involve her and Alex turning into dolphins, yelling, "See you, suckers!" and escaping on their own. The dining table looked like it had been made from the world's largest mast, cut in half lengthwise and folded out to make 2 leaves. Overhead, suspended from the rafters by an anchor chain, was a sea glass chandelier. Instead of candles or electric lights, glowing souls of the dead swirled in oversized sconces, just to set the mood, I guessed. I was about to sit down between Blitz and Hearth when I realized there were name tags at the place settings. Dwarf, Crone, Elf, Hevering, Green Headscarf. I found mine on the other side of the table. Blonde Guy. Great. We had assigned seating. A daughter of Aegir sat down on either side of me. According to the name tags, the lady on my left was Colga. The one on my right... Oh boy. Apparently her name was... Blodughada. I wondered if that was the sound her mom had made on anesthesia after giving birth to daughter number 9. Maybe I could just call her Blode. Hi, I said. Blode smiled. Her teeth were stained red. Her wavy hair was flecked with blood.
Hello. It was a pleasure dragging you under the sea.
Yeah, thanks. Her sister Colga leaned in. Frost started to form on my forearm. Colga's dress appeared to be woven from ice shards and slush.
I hope we get to keep them, sister, she said. They'd make fine tortured spirits.
Blode cackled. Her breath smelled like fresh ground beef just out of the fridge.
Yes, indeed. Perfect for our chandelier.
Appreciate the offer, I said, but we actually have a pretty full calendar.
Where are my manners? Blode said. In your language, I am called Blood Red Hair. My sister here is Freezing Wave. And your name is...
She frowned at my card.
Blonde Guy?
I didn't see how that was any worse than Blood Red Hair or Bigly. You can call me Jimmy, I offered. In your language, that's... Jimmy. Blode didn't look satisfied with that.
There's something about you.
She sniffed my face.
Have you sailed over my blood red waters in a naval battle before?
Pretty sure not.
Perhaps my mother, Ran, described you to me. But why would she?
Guests! Aegir boomed,
and I had never been happier for an interruption.
Here is my first microbrew of the evening. This is a peach lambic mead that makes a lovely aperitif. I welcome your comments after you try it.
His nine daughters oohed and awed as Aegir hefted the mead cask and carried it around the table, pouring everyone a serving.
I think you'll find this has a fruity edge, Aegir said, with just a hint of
Magnus Chase,
Blode yelled, surging to her feet and pointing at me.
This is Magnus Chase!
Chapter 10. Can we talk about mead? Typical. Somebody says fruity edge, and immediately my name comes to mind. Come on, people. A little respect. The daughters of Aegir shot to their feet. Some picked up steak knives, forks, or napkins to stab, poke, or strangle us with. Aegir screamed,
Magnus Chase? What is this deception?
My friends and I didn't move a muscle. We all knew how guest rights worked. We still might be able to talk our way out of a fight, but once we drew our weapons, we stopped being considered guests and started being the catch of the day. Against an entire family of Jotun deities on their home turf, I didn't like our odds.
Wait, I said,
as calmly as I could, with a woman named Blood-Red Hair holding a knife over me.
We're still guests at your table. We haven't broken any rules.
Steam rolled beneath the brim of Aegir's Panama hat. His gold-rimmed glasses fogged up. Under his arm, the mead cask began to creak like a pecan in a nutcracker.
You lied to me, Aegir snarled. You said you weren't Magnus Chase.
You're going to break your cask, I warned. That got his attention. Aegir shifted the mead cask forward and held it in both arms like a baby.
Guest rights do not apply. I granted you a place at my table under false pretenses.
I never actually said I wasn't Magnus Chase, I reminded him. Besides, your daughters also brought us here because we mentioned mead. Kolga snarled.
And because you have an ugly yellow ship.
I wondered if everyone could see my heart beating through my shirt. It definitely felt that strong.
Right, but also mead. We're here to talk about mead.
We are?
Halfborn asked. Mallory looked like she would have hit him, except there was a sea giantess in the way.
Of course we are, you oaf!
So you see, I continued, that wasn't a false pretense. That pretense was completely true. The daughters of Aegir muttered to themselves, unable to counter my flawless logic. Aegir cradled his cask.
What exactly do you have to say about mead?
I'm glad you asked. Then I realized I had no answer. Once again, Samira to the rescue.
We will explain, she promised. But stories are better told over dinner. With good mead, are they not?
Aegir stroked his cask affectionately.
An aperitif with a fruity edge.
Exactly, Sam agreed. So let's break our fast together. If you are not completely satisfied with our explanations at the end of the dinner, then you can kill us.
He can?
TJ asked.
I mean, sure. He can.
On my right, Blode's claw-like fingernails dripped with red salt water. On my left, a miniature hailstorm swirled around Kolga. Interspersed between my friends, the other seven daughters snarled like Tasmanian devil waterspouts. Blitzen put his hands on his chainmail vest. After getting stabbed by the Skolfnung sword a few months ago, he was a little sensitive about knife attacks. Hearthstone's eyes flicked from face to face, trying to keep track of the conversation. Lip-reading a single person was hard enough.
Trying to read an entire room was nearly impossible. Mallory Keene gripped her mead goblet, ready to imprint its decorative design on the nearest giantess's face. Halfborn frowned sleepily, no doubt convinced now that this was all a dream. TJ tried to look inconspicuous as he dug into his pack of firing caps, and Alex Fierro just sat back calmly, sipping his peach lambic mead. Alex needed no preparation for battle. I'd seen how fast he could draw his garrote. The sea god Aegir was the tipping point. All he had to say was, "Kill them," and we were cooked like honey mead. We'd fight ferociously, no doubt, but we would die.
"I don't know," Aegir mused. "My wife said to kill you if I ever saw you. I was to drown you slowly, revive you, then drown you again."
That sounded like Rand talking.
"Great Lord," Blitzen chimed in, "did you swear a formal oath to kill Magnus Chase?"
"Well, no," Aegir admitted. "But when my wife asks..."
"You have to consider her wishes, of course," Blitz agreed. "But you also have to weigh that against guest rights, eh? And how can you be sure what to do until you've given us time to tell our whole story?"
"Let me kill them, father,"
growled the daughter with exceptionally big hands.
"I will grasp them until they scream."
"Silence, grasping wave," Aegir commanded.
"Let me do the honors,"
said another daughter, throwing her plate to the floor.
"I will pitch them into Jormungand's mouth."
"Hold, pitching wave," Aegir frowned. "The dwarf has a point. This is a quandary."
He stroked his keg. I waited for him to say, "My mead cask is angry, and when my mead cask is angry, people die." Instead, finally, he heaved a sigh.
"It would be a shame to waste all this good mead. We will eat and drink together. You will tell me your story, paying special attention to how it relates to mead."
He gestured to his daughters to be seated again.
"But I warn you, Magnus Chase, if I decide to kill you, my vengeance shall be terrible. I am a Jotun deity, a primordial force. Like my brothers fire and air, I, the sea, am a raging power that will not be contained."
The kitchen door burst open. In a cloud of smoke, Eldir appeared, his beard still smoldering and his chef's hat now on fire. In his arms was a leaning tower of covered platters.
"Who had the gluten-free meal?"
he growled.
"Gluten-free?" Aegir asked. "I don't think we had gluten-free."
"That's mine," said Blode.
She noticed my expression and scowled defensively.
"What? I'm on an all-blood diet."
"That's fine," I squeaked.
"Okay, then," Aegir said, taking charge of the orders. "Halal meal, that is Samira's. The vegetarian is Magnus Kill Him Later Chase. The green hair entree..."
"Right here,"
said Alex, which was probably unnecessary. Even in a room filled with sea giantesses, he was still the only one present with green hair. Platters were distributed. Mead was poured.
"Right,"
Aegir said, lowering himself into his throne.
"Everybody good?"
"Got one left,"
Eldir yelled.
"The Buddhist meal?"
"That's me," said Aegir.
"Don't stare," I told myself, as the primordial deity uncovered his platter of tofu and bean sprouts. "This is all completely normal."
"Now, where was I?" Aegir said. "Oh yes, a raging power that cannot be contained. I will rip you all limb from limb."
The threat would have been more frightening if he hadn't been waving a steamed snow pea at us. Alex sipped from his goblet.
Can I just say that this mead is excellent? If I'm not mistaken, it has a fruity edge. How do you brew it?
Aegir's eyes lit up.
You have a discerning palate. You see, the secret is in the temperature of the honey.
Aegir began to hold forth. Alex nodded politely and asked more questions. I realized he was buying us time. Hoping to draw out the meal while we thought of amazing things to say about mead. But I was fresh out of mead-related ideas. I glanced at Blode's plate. Big mistake. She was slurping away at a large red gelatin mold. I turned the other direction. Kolga's meal was a plate of different colored snow cones, arranged in a fan like peacock feathers. Kolga noticed me looking and snarled, her teeth like chiseled ice cubes. The temperature dropped so fast, frost crystals crackled in my ear canals.
What are you staring at, Magnus Chase? You can't have my snow cones.
No, no. I was just wondering, what side are you guys fighting on in Ragnarok?
She hissed.
The sea swallows everything.
I waited for more. That seemed to be her entire battle plan.
Okay, I said. So you're kind of neutral? That's cool.
Cool is good. Cold is better.
Right, but your dad isn't friends with Loki.
Of course not. After that horrible flighting, Loki disgraced this hall, the gods, my father, even my father's mead.
Right. The flighting.
The word seemed familiar. I was pretty sure I'd seen it on the TV screen in Valhalla, but I had no idea what it meant.
I don't suppose you've heard the name Bulwark? I asked, pressing my luck. Or what it might have to do with mead?
Kolga sneered at me as if I were a fool.
Bulwark was the alias of the mead thief, of course.
The mead thief?
That sounded like the title of a really bad novel to me.
The one who stole Kvasir's mead,
Kolga said.
The only mead my father cannot brew. Bah, you're clueless. I'll look forward to stuffing your soul in our chandelier.
She went back to enjoying her snow cones. Kvasir. Great. I asked about one name I didn't know, and I got another name I didn't know. But I felt like I was getting close to something important. Some combination of puzzle pieces that would explain Uncle Randolph's journal, give me his plan for beating Loki, and maybe even provide a mead-based solution for getting us out of this hall alive. Aegir continued holding forth about mead brewing, explaining to Alex the virtues of staggered yeast nutrients and hydrometers. Alex heroically managed to look interested. I caught Hearthstone's eye across the table. I signed, "What is a flyting? He frowned. "Contest." He raised his index finger and twirled it around like he was sticking it up. Ah, yes. The ASL symbol for insults. And K-V-A-S-I-R? I asked. Hearthstone pulled back his hands like he'd touched a hot stove.
Then you know?
Sam rapped her knuckles on the table to get my attention. Her hands flew in small, furious ASL gestures.
Been trying to tell you. Loki was here. Long ago. Insult contest. Have to promise Aegir revenge. Alex and I think there is mead we can use.
I got this, I signaled back. Amazingly, I felt like I had a plan. Not all the details, not even most of the details. More like I'd been spun around blindfolded, then somebody had put a stick in my hand and faced me in the general direction of the piñata and said, "Start swinging." But it was better than nothing.
Great Aegir!
I jumped up in my seat and climbed onto the table before I could think about what I was doing. I will now explain to you why you should not kill us, and what it has to do with Mead. Silence fell around the table. 9 storm giantesses glared at me, as if considering all the different ways they could pitch, grasp, hurl, or freeze me to death. At the edge of my vision, Alex flashed me a message in ASL. Your fly is open. With superhuman willpower, I managed not to look down. I stayed focused on frowning Aegir and the single bean sprout dangling from his beard. The sea god grumbled.
I was just explaining how to sanitize a fermenter. This interruption had better be good.
It is, I promised, slyly checking my zipper, which was not in fact open. Our crew is sailing forth to bring Loki to justice. He has escaped his bonds, but we mean to find his ship, Naglfar, before it can sail at midsummer, recapture Loki, and put him back in chains. Help us, and you will have vengeance for that terrible flighting.
A puff of steam lifted Aegir's Panama hat, like the lid of a popcorn popper. You dare speak of that disgrace? He demanded. Here, at the very table where it happened?
I know, he flighted you, I yelled. He flighted you bad. You and all your godly guests got a mean flighting. He even flighted your mead. But we can defeat Loki and pay him back. I will challenge Loki myself.
Sam put her head in her hands. Alex stared at the ceiling and mouthed, Wow. No. My other friends stared at me aghast, as if I'd just pulled the pin out of a grenade. I did that once on the battlefield in Valhalla before I fully understood how grenades worked. It had not ended well for the grenade or for me. Aegir became deadly calm. He leaned forward, the lenses flashing in his golden glasses.
You, Magnus Chase, would challenge Loki to a flighting?
Yes. Despite my friend's reactions, I still felt certain this was the correct answer, even though I didn't quite understand what it meant.
I will flight the heck out of him!
Aegir stroked his beard, found the bean sprout, flicked it away.
How would you achieve this? Not even the gods could match Loki in a flighting. You would need some incredible secret weapon to give you an edge.
Perhaps even a fruity edge, I thought, because this was the other thing I was sure of, even if I didn't totally understand it. I stood up straight and announced in my deepest, quest-accepting voice,
I will use the mead of Kevin!
Alex joined Samira in the Bury Your Face in Your Hands club. Aegir narrowed his eyes.
You mean the mead of Kvasir?
Yes, I said. That.
Impossible, Kolga protested.
Her mouth dyed 6 different colors from her snow cones.
Father, don't believe them.
And, great Aegir, I persisted. If you let us go, we'll even, bring you a sample of Kvasir's mead, since it is the only mead you can't brew yourself.
My friends and the 9 giantesses all turned to Aegir, waiting for his verdict. A thin smile played across the sea god's mouth. He looked like he'd managed to jump into a newly opened express lane at Whole Foods and finally scored his matcha smoothie.
Well, this changes everything, he said.
It does? I asked.
He rose from his throne.
I would love to see Loki brought to justice, and in a flighting no less. I would also love to get a sample of Kvasir's mead. And I would prefer not to kill you all, since I did grant you guest rights.
Great, I said. So you'll let us go?
Unfortunately, Aegir said, you're still Magnus Chase, and my wife wants you dead. If I let you go, she'll be mad at me. But if you were to escape, say,
while I wasn't looking, and my daughters didn't manage to kill you in the attempt,